You're rocking with the voice of Town View. We put our spin on trending topics and school news. Thought provoking, insightful, we speak the truth. We do it for all ages, not just for the youth. Listen close, you might learn something. Or laugh so hard, you split your side of something. Live stream a podcast. Whenever you tune in, it's sure to be a blast. Let's be honest, you don't wanna miss that. Content so real, you gonna wanna run it back. We keep you entertained while making an impact. Want forum and announcements? Well, this is not that. Sports, pop, culture, political. Whatever you like, we got you covered, bro. It's a movement, more than just a show. It's KSBM Radio.
Come closer to the music. Broadcasting live from Marvin E. Robinson School of Business and Management, Dallas, Texas.
My radio station.
We are KSBM Radio, the voice of Townview.
Hello and welcome everyone to KSBM Radio, the voice of Townview. I'm your host Dante, and today I'm joined by my co-hosts.
I'm Cammie.
Jelly.
I'm Jojo.
And today we are so honored to be joined by Chief Albert Martinez this morning. He is the Chief of Police for Dallas Independent School District and assumed his position earlier this year in February. Chief Martinez previously served as a second in command of the Dallas Police Department, bringing wealth of experience and dedication to his role. He's not just any law enforcement officer, he's a dedicated leader, passionate about ensuring schools' safety and the community safety and security. Today, we would like to congratulate Mr. Albert Martinez on assuming his role this year.
Thank you.
It's such an honor to have you with us this morning. So before we get started, is there anything you'd like to share with us?
No, I think we'll just dive in and go from there.
Awesome. So to get us started, can you tell us about your journey from growing up in Pecos, Texas to graduating high school?
Sure. So my hometown, where I was born and raised, is, again, like you said, Pecos, Texas. And it's just a little country town out in the desert of West Texas. It's where all the oil is right now, so that's being pulled up. But, you know, it was simple living, very slow. And my high school, or my school district at the time, was the Pecos Barstow Toya Independent School District, which was, I think when I was growing up, we were 4A for the most part. You know, population about 20,000, student body maybe about 800. So, but you know, what's nice about it in a small town is you have all your family there, right? Your grandparents and cousins and such. So, nothing too crazy. You know, there were always those moments, but having good friendships and dedicated teachers, I think for us in our school district, teachers were such a big influence on us, you know. But also just the friendships you accumulated, plus being a small school. You were able to participate in so many things, you know, so it was great.
So what motivated you to study criminal justice at Sam Houston State University for both your bachelor's and master's degrees?
So it kind of goes to when I was your age, a teenager, as I was growing up, I was already interested in law enforcement as a kid. You know, my cousins say when we would play, I always had to be a police officer, a cop, right? So that's just how I was. So what happened for me was when I was 14 at the time, I joined the police explorers, which were a subset of the Boy Scouts. So, but the police explorer program was designed to kind of encourage you if you were interested in law enforcement. And so that, as the saying goes, got the juices flowing. So I actually worked, rode out with the Pecos Police Department. And then with the Texas Highway Patrol as well. So from there, that's really what got me wanting to go into law enforcement. And so from there, going to Sam Houston State, I didn't know much about college. I had one cousin that was a year ahead of me that went to college. No one in my family had been. So I really didn't know much. I didn't ask a lot of questions. I didn't ask the right questions. So all I knew in a discussion with a recruiter from Texas A&M, actually said, well, you know, we've got a really good criminal justice program at Sam Houston State University because Texas A&M didn't have it, and I didn't know any better. So I just said, okay, well, that's where I'm going to school. So when I got the brochure, because back then you got it mailed, I got the brochure, I put it on the kitchen table that evening and told my dad, this is where I want to go. So, and that's where it was. So I went all the way from West Texas to East Texas 10 hours away from home. And that was it. That's what hooked it. And then my master's degree was already here at Dallas PD. And I went to Dallas Baptist University for a master's degree in organizational management. And that was just part of personal fulfillment. My mother, my entire life, had been pushing for continue to get your education, continue to get education. So that was important. And again, that self-fulfillment was important for me. So that's what I did.
What was your experience like at Sam Houston?
You know, it was a culture shock for me, to be honest with you. I grew up in a town where, again, the majority of us were Hispanic, and not very many African Americans. And we had, obviously, Anglo, white. But going to East Texas, I became a very, very small part of the minority. Very few Hispanics there at the time. I think we're at the population of the university was 9,500 or so. So a lot of African-American, white, and then they were all from the big cities, right? Mm-hmm. So I had a few friends that were from Houston, Dallas area, South Texas. I think there was only one from West Texas, and we just happened to meet somehow. I didn't know him, but we just, you know, sharing those cultural ties. But it was, like I said, culture shock at the difference, but... overall, it was a great university. I enjoyed the campus. You know, coming from the desert to all this greenery and the rain and all that was tremendous. So it was a great 4 years of my life there.
Were there any individuals who had a significant part on your role in becoming or joining law enforcement?
You know, my parents were always very significant, right? Mm-hmm. My mother, coming from Mexico, again, with a third grade, fourth grade education. Mm-hmm. Again, that's why she emphasized education. My father, on my father's side, he was fourth generation Texan. Came from my great-great-grandfather came from Mexico. Mm-hmm. So I became the fifth generation Texas. And he served in the military and the Navy during the Vietnam War. So always a source of inspiration for me. I had an uncle that served in the Army, another source of inspiration. Mm-hmm. And then directly with law enforcement was a state trooper who has passed away. He was my friend and mentor, like a big brother. And that was Emmett Moore, African-American state trooper back home. And he was the one I rode a lot with. So he really gave me a lot of insight to the work. Because you always have these ideas of what policing is based on the movies or even now like on Cops. Mm-hmm. But he was showing me the reality of what it was, you know. And so that was really eye-opening for me. Mm-hmm.
Can you recall a pivotal moment or experience that solidified your decision to pursue a law enforcement career? What was it about that moment that affirmed this path for you?
No, again, it was those ride-alongs and seeing the work, you know, a lot of traffic stops and working crashes. But it was just saying, okay, I think that's what I want to do, and that's where my heart was set. And those ride-alongs just solidified it. There was no going back for me at that time. And that helped make my decisions, like I said, for college and for my life, because I was a police officer back home, but I wanted to work for a large organization, and that's what brought me here to Dallas.
So going back to your early days, obviously policing is very difficult at times and very sensitive topic. What were some of the situations where you learned to more effectively communicate with the community and where you kind of figured how to communicate and just figure things out more smooth?
Yes, great point. You know, law enforcement is difficult, but that's why it takes so much to be able to get into law enforcement. Not only do you apply, but you go through all sorts of testing, from psychological testing, physical testing, polygraph. You get a background there looking at everything you've done in the past, your education, interviews. And not only when you finish that, then they say, okay, you can go to the academy. So then you go to the academy, and you spend, with Dallas, I spent 9 months in the academy. And that's basically college-level classes along with the training. And I had already been to an academy before that. So, and then after that, you go through 6 months of field training. So it takes about, in Dallas, it takes 15 months before you actually are kind of sent on your own. And even then, there's 2 months of being with a senior officer. So like everything else that we do, a lot of it has to do with connecting with senior officers to teach you the way, to tell you these are the things you can do. There's a saying that you operate within the framework that you've been given, right? Because a lot of officers can come out thinking, as I would like to say, we're God's answer to policing, right? We're going to come out and change the world, make a difference. But you also realize there's parameters, there's walls, there's only so much you can do. So, but that is part of what we do in our work. It's working within that framework, because you can't just do everything. Plus, law enforcement also, like even education in a public school, no matter what you really want to do, there's always going to be rules and regulations that affect how you can do things. And so sometimes those take away from you, but they're also there to help you do your job better. And sometimes they kind of impact you in a negative way.
So could you share any challenges that you faced at the Dallas Police Department and how those challenges have overall influenced your professional growth?
Well, you know, throughout the career, the biggest challenge was always trying to find solutions. I think the best way I can describe that is, you know, when I was a young officer, again, coming from the country, stepping into homes that are in poverty and deprived. And when you walk into some homes, you just feel this overwhelming amount of negativity or hopelessness, if you will. You're there for a certain purpose. And so those were difficult things to try to overcome. It's like, how do I really help them? Mm-hmm. Even if you have to make an arrest and take a violent person out of there, or you're taking a report, there is a sort of emptiness in reality of, like, how am I really impacting that? And it takes a while, because most of us that come in as what we call rookies, you really just want to get out there and chase the bad guys and do all the law enforcement stuff, the things that you really wanted to do. That's what you signed up for. That's why people love Cops, because they love that show, because you get to see the action. The reality is it's about 95-98% paperwork. You know, you got to think your way through things, decision-making, problem-solving, critical thinking, conflict resolution, all these other sorts of knowledge, skills, abilities that you need. And so through time, as you become a veteran, you realize, I can't arrest everybody. I can't really get in there and I'm not going to solve all the problems, but what difference can I make in this moment for those persons? The difference now, having gone up in leadership through the department, is there are so many resources nowadays that are able to help our officers, whether that's, and you see it here at school, right? You have mental wellness, you have counselors, you have people who are trying to intervene where problems are. Because the reality is when we as police are dealing with situations, we're dealing with that very finite moment, right? But reality is there's so much deeper that we can't get into, because we have to keep moving on to the next situation. Mm-hmm. And this is where now you can bring in other resources. Like in Dallas, we created Right Care, which was a officer, a fire paramedic, and a counselor, a clinician out of Parkland, so that we could start working on mental health with people, right? Because we couldn't just arrest them all, and that wasn't really giving us a solution. Because the argument we were making at the time was, this is, mental health is not a policing situation, it's a society situation. Mm-hmm. And so we were actually advocating to help pull us back away from this, and let's offer more long-term solutions.
So what motivated you to transition from being a part of the City of Dallas Police Department to Dallas ISD Police Department?
Great question. So I served 29 years with Dallas, and again, rising up to second in command with another chief. We work right under Chief Garcia. The opportunity to come here to Dallas ISD was partly motivated in that I was ready for the leadership challenge. I was ready for the leadership opportunity that was presented here at Dallas ISD. Part of the challenge was, after the Uvalde shooting, we all know about the mandate from the state. Mm-hmm. And the state says you got to have an officer or a gun on every campus. Mm-hmm. And that's a difficult challenge, because you're told this is what you must do, but there's not enough funding for it either. Mm-hmm. Plus, now in our world of policing, you have to find people who are committed to the goals of the organization, because again, it really is about service. But you also have to have people that are willing to actually truly put their lives on the line should something be happening to defend mm-hmm. the lives of others. Mm-hmm. And I honestly, there are those who are willing. We just have to get them to go through the process, like I mentioned to you earlier, because it's not an easy process to get into that point of service. Mm-hmm.
Can you elaborate on your vision for promoting diversity and inclusion within your department regarding recruitment and internal culture?
Sure. So, you know, a lot of that we do, again, in the recruiting side of things is everybody's always going to be looking at, are you a good fit for the organization? Are you committed to the goals and the values that are in the organization? And that's where diversity will always help because whether it's your gender, your sex, your race, all that is important because people right now in our society, they want to, does this person look like me, right? There's a certain connection there. Some feel like it's a cultural connection as well. So our programs are designed, if you will, our recruiting is we're out advocating. In fact, we have our PTEX classes here in the Dallas ISD. We also put out advertising for recruiting. And so we just go out there and try to bring in people of whatever that diversity group is to come and serve, right, and follow those goals. And then internally in our culture, at least at the Dallas ISD Police, we have the officers, the commissioned security, and the public safety officers. And so it's a very diverse group already, and we want to keep that going, plus keep training and keep educating and build up our collective culture.
What are some proactive measures you plan to implement to enhance safety protocols and emergency plans?
You know, one of the things that I'm very pleased with here at Dallas ISD is there's a lot of effort in that safety and security. So to your question about what proactive measures am I taking, one is, of course, we're trying to hire more officers. We're also trying to make sure that we get more security involved as well. The programs that we're talking about is not just at the police department, but is how do we help our schools stay safer? Working with our principals, our associate superintendents, what do they need? As you already know, there are all sorts of things happening. Part of it, the law mandate, but part of it is securing our schools even better. Our programs will probably be, again, how do we tap into the student body? And I think that y'all are going to ask that, but it's how do we tap into that so that we can actually make better, do better on involving everyone? Because at the end of the day, no matter what we do in policing, it involves the community, and the community is key to that effort. And so we'll find for those programs. And if you really push dial that further, one of the most important things that we can do, again, for our students is let's help them where they are with their issues. So that it's not a policing issue, but it's more of a community issue, a mental wellness issue, whatever the situation is. That's, I think, where we can make the biggest impact.
In what ways do you foresee technology playing a role in enhancing safety and security within DISD schools?
Depends on, well, a lot of that technology is already in place, right? There's cameras being used, there's door locking mechanisms, we're working on the Raptor system, which is an emergency alert system, right? And of course, with a lot of planning. One of the things that we will implement here is at Dallas ISD is we will create a drone program that we can use for events, for games, things that where we need having the eye in the sky, if you will. Mm. It's a cheaper alternative. It helps us. We can patrol parking lots with it. Can monitor should something happen, right? Like I was mentioning to your security team a while ago, when we go to a football game, say, and we may have to deploy a bunch of officers in security, the best story for us is that we're not any part of the story. Nothing happened. It was a great game. Everybody enjoyed it. Everybody got to come in, enjoy themselves, and got to leave. That's success for us, right? So, and that's what we want with technology. Camera trailers will be used as well. When I was with Dallas PD, we were leveraging our technology for that very reason, trying to enhance our safety. So we'll also work closely with Dallas PD, and we're in other 14 cities, so we'll work with them as well. How can we enhance that safety on their end to other cities to protect our student body and our staff?
So having served in various roles within both the City of Dallas Police Department and now as Chief of Police for Dallas ISD, what are some key differences you've observed between the two law enforcement agencies in terms of the roles, responsibilities, and approaches to community policing?
I think the biggest difference I see between both is obviously that Dallas ISD police were focused on the campus and the immediate area around it. The mandate is to focus on that. Even though we have police powers, and because of the state police powers, you can pretty much enforce wherever you need to. I think for us, the other difference that I see is there's things are a little bit more manageable in one sense with Dallas ISD, only because you have the security officers, you have the public safety officers. And the biggest key for us is really enhancing that relationship with our administration, our staff, as well as the student body. And really that's probably where I'll be reaching out to some of you all asking, you know, what do you see from us that we can do better and help? And even part of that is the education, but the dialogue is so important, right? So important. And we do that with the community. With Dallas, I can tell you with Dallas PD, and Chief Garcia will tell you we're very shorthanded over there. Just the demand. It's the demand for service. Dallas, the Dallas-Fort Worth Metroplex is exploding. But that also means you have the working class, the working poor, the poor. And these are parts of our community that need more government service. And that's where the demand is. So we need more people to be willing to serve in policing, firefighting, nursing, and so on. Because a life of service is well worth it, but that's the demand that we have right now.
But what are some unique challenges and responsibilities you face now as the Chief of Police for Dallas ISD compared to your previous role as second-in-command at the Dallas Police Department?
The challenges? Really, honestly, I think the challenges are really the same. I say the same because one thing I've already noticed here with Dallas ISD, mental wellness is very critical. We have our young students being affected in certain manners. You have society pressures. Your generation right now lives through those phones. My children are no different. But that's your real world. For us that are older, we didn't grow up with these phones. We grew up with phones with cords, right? We don't grab the sense of, it's not a real world to us, to be honest with you. I may use that phone. I may be on it. I may be doing all sorts of things. But I'm not on social media. I don't care what's being said. Even if I'm criticized, say, Chief, that was the worst interview ever. It doesn't really matter to me. But for you all, it's different. There's just this, you're 24/7. And that is leading a lot of students to what they call the online cyberbullying, right? Because it's so critical to what you do. So there has to be a disconnect. And so that's where we see that mental illness. It's the same thing we have in society right now. Being out there, that's why we're trying to find these solutions to help, because it's a breakdown for our community. And the other thing that I would say in a very similar way, again, is everybody wants the best for each other in reality. And that's what we see in our community in Dallas. In Dallas, people want the best for each other. Yes, there's always going to be division, but everybody's just wanting, they would tell us, and Chief Garcia would tell you this, but I had it the same thing in communities, and they're telling us, hey, don't forget about us. Help us. We need more officers. And this is from whether it's an African-American neighborhood to Hispanic, working class, white, whatever the case may be. We're needed in law enforcement. But we also need the community, and that's where trust and relationships are so important. Because at the end of the day, policing is based on consensual authority. It's by having that authority from the consent of the governed for us to conduct our job.
So what is your hope for your legacies? What do you hope to leave behind?
It's a tough question because I don't think too much about legacy. But I will be honest with you, the superintendent asked me the same thing in an interview when I was coming in. And I'll give you the same answer I gave her. And it's my legacy is just that. When it's my time to go into the sunset, is to simply be noted that I served, and I served well. I gave of myself, of my life of service, my heart of service for those who need to be able to, when I'm done. And they say, hey, he served well, he did great, and we're greatly appreciated. And that's really my biggest concern.
So what's your opinion on gun control as it relates to school security as well as personal safety?
For gun control, with the Second Amendment, everybody has a right to bear arms. and that's how it was written back then in the Constitution. So for personal safety, people are going to have it. I think it'll be extremely difficult to remove that from the Constitution. And as since you asked it in a personal fashion, I don't think it should be removed. Now, having said that, again, when you get into the safety and security of things, as we've seen over and over, we're finding that when these mass shootings are happening, there's rifles involved, right? Where back then, when I first started, it was mostly handguns. So we see a growing aggression in the use of larger caliber firearms and rifles, which are very potent for our people. So again, we'll do everything we can to defeat them. But at some point, in order for those to change, since we're law enforcement, the people have to decide what do they want, right? And going through elected officials, how do you want to be governed? How do you want to affect that? I find it difficult that so many rifles are out there. But that's where you get that conundrum, right? You have the personal safety, but then the bad guys are never going to comply. They're not about the Constitution. They just want to have a gun for whatever purpose. And so in that conundrum, we're trying to figure out how can we best deter. For example, City of Dallas, we probably seized, let's say 4,000 guns in a year, okay? But what if you have 40,000 guns coming in or so? You know, facts say that there's about 3 to 8 guns per household in our country. There's enough guns here in our country that you can have that many. So even seizing 4,000 guns isn't going to make a big difference. So I'll finish up that part with this, is if you have a weapon, you have to respect it. And that's how we were taught in the academy and such. But we also have to know that people will use their weapons to defend themselves, and they have the right to do that.
What are your thoughts on the prevalence of vaping in schools and its impact on student safety and well-being within DISD?
You know, with vaping, the studies are starting to come out. You're finding some research that is saying if you vape, I think they said one pod of vape is like smoking 20 cigarettes. And so it seems like what we've gone is from bad to worse decisions. And that's going to impact persons. You know, cigarettes came about through the Indian tribes, our Native Americans, back during the colonial times. But now we've taken this vaping, which is full of chemicals, and people are taking that in. And the problem with these chemicals is that some of them are human-made, and your body isn't able to detoxify as easy. Sorry, losing my voice. People aren't able to detoxify as easily. So, and we see that here in Dallas. Too much vaping. Sorry. I'm drying out.
Okay.
But that's really the terrible thing about it is too many students are using it, and we're going to see long-term effects.
So considering vaping is a consistent issue for our schools, what strategies do you plan to implement to address this concern within DISD?
Well, we'll certainly work with our administration and our staff and see what they're seeing, and with the student body to get input. Like, what are they seeing, and how can we make an impact? Because the other part of vaping is you have to inhale that too, you know, that secondhand smoke, if you will, or in this case, secondhand vape, because we don't have all the answers. And we need the community to help us and guide us on what they're seeing, you know. And the other part is, and the other part is that the peer pressure of students helping each other, maybe that'll make a big difference.
So what can we do as students to actively support you and the Dallas Police Department in ensuring a safe and secure learning environment for all students and staff?
You know, I got to ask this question on the weekend, and what we need is what you see that you feel is of concern, report it. Be specific and talk to us, because a lot of people feel like, oh, well, the police never do anything, but you can only act on what you know. You know, yes, we do investigations and such, but if you don't have specific details, it kind of also hampers us. Like, for example, let's say here at Townview Law School, somebody said, oh, well, they're bringing in drugs. Well, okay, that's very general. But when having the specific of who or how it might be being brought in, that's a little bit different. There's actionable information. The other part, like I said, even with vaping and such, is what do you all see the input and bringing out that information that we can act on. And finding other programs throughout the nation that show success, right? Success that helps deter or inform. Mm-hmm. Can we educate our 4th, 5th, and 6th graders on these hazards? Mm-hmm. And will that make an impact for them as well?
Mm-hmm. What excites you most about your new position as police chief of Dallas ISD?
What excites me most is just that it's a different program, and it also helps us with with what we're doing. It's something different, but I think what excites me most is that just all this effort that I'm seeing. You know, having served 29 years with the Dallas Police Department, I can tell you that our students, or I should say, everything that we're doing. It's so great because education is so important. It's the biggest life-changing event that you can have, right? So for our people, it's the change can happen right here, right? Like I said, we can't arrest our way out of the problem, but education is so critical to setting the foundation for our youth that I'm excited to be a part of this. And helping make that difference and providing that safe environment for learning so that you all can go on to whatever your education is going to drive you forward and the future of your careers.
What message do you have to those aspiring to get into law enforcement and all the people who are just starting out as rookies?
What message? Just be committed, especially if here at the student body and elsewhere. Be committed to that service. But, it doesn't start so much just because you're a police officer, right? It starts even now. Are you out there volunteering? Are you out there serving? Are you kind of shaping the things around you to be able to go serve, right? It's like what you all are doing here. You're shaping your own lives in a way through this educational environment so that if you decide to go into whether it's business or something related to entertainment, news, whatever the case may be, your own podcast, you're doing it. And that's what our other students should do, is go out there and go serve, but also learn about law enforcement if this is your interest. And what I do want to do in our Dallas ISD Police Department is have those relationships where they can come and see what we do and eventually also make that connection with Dallas PD, right, and other surrounding agencies. So that you can understand what you're getting into, because what people think it is isn't necessarily the reality of what we do. Like I said, it's a lot of thinking, it's a lot of problem solving and critical thinking. So there's a lot of need out there, and we need a lot of people that are willing to do it, but you also can't allow yourself to be deterred by the fact that, yes, is it dangerous? Sure. But there was an old saying that we had, it's 95% boredom, 5% sheer terror. There's going to be a time when you have to step in, whatever the case may be. But you just do that. That's what you have to be willing to accept as well.
So considering that you're a father of three, how would you say you balance your professional duties with your personal life and family commitments?
Sometimes it's difficult. I haven't done the best job on that, to be honest, but the best balance you can have is that you can make it home and just be there with them, find those events to do. In our same thing as I just mentioned earlier about the phones, right? We're so connected to our work, and that kind of starts pulling away from your mm-hmm. personal time. Your generation, or especially the generation before you, have kind of pushed back and said, no, I want more life, quality life of life balance. So, and that's kind of what I do now is not so much the pushback, but it's more of I get home and I try to focus on the family. know, and do those parts of whether it's just eating dinner and relaxing and talking, and because you do have to kind of pull away from the work, you know. And in a leadership position, there's a lot of demands. You can always have your mind just focus on that. And if you allow yourself though to focus without really pulling away, that's where your anxiety and other issues build up. So that's my effort.
So how do you unwind outside of work? And do you have any activities or pastimes that you enjoy sharing with others?
You know, right now, mostly it's just having the time with family and resting. I pretend I play golf, you know. But I'll go out every now and then. It's not as often as I want to, but I'm trying. Mm-hmm. But that's, again, just to get away for a little bit. Mm-hmm. And nothing else. Nothing much more crazier than that. Just resting and taking time away. Mm-hmm. And doing some yard work, just again, just mm-hmm. so that the physical labor of doing things just doesn't require you to have to think too much.
Mm-hmm. Moving on to some fun questions now. If you could swap jobs with any fictional detective or police officer from any TV or movies for a day, who would it be and why?
Wow. I don't even know any modern ones. I don't even watch very many of them, you know. Y'all probably wouldn't even know, but there was one that I liked when I was young, and that was Kojak, Telly Savalas. Great actor, great show. But it was simple. But what I liked about him was at least his character. He was always very caring. He got the job done, right? Mm-hmm. Of course, you only have an hour to solve the murder or whatever. But he would be one I'd be interested in. I did love Hill Street Blues, too, because it was NYPD, and it was sort of kind of real, you know, in it parts ways. I think one of the best movies and one of the most realistic movies in modern wise is Tour of Duty that came out with LAPD. I thought that one was a really good movie.
So if you could give one piece of advice to your high school self, what would it be and why?
That you're not limited. You know, back then, maybe I was wrong, but at least I saw that, okay, I'm going to go into law enforcement. That's what I'm going to do. Right, but I was interested in chemistry. I was interested in a few other things, and you all have so much in front of you now that you can do different things. It doesn't just have to be one dimension of it. You know, be three-dimensional. You know, involve volunteering is what I would tell myself. You know, and the balance, like you asked. But there's so many ways you can give to others, and quite honestly, I think that's what you find in life is when you're giving. You find it much more rewarding than just doing the job. It's part of the not only the self-fulfillment, but there's a richness in giving of yourself for others to make part of their lives better. And so that's what I would tell myself is just be three-dimensional, go do different things. Doesn't have to be law enforcement because that's what I want to do, but you want to play a guitar, learn how to play guitar, go do it. You want to learn whatever the case may be. You like to sing, go join a choir, go do other things. Like myself, I would have said, no, go find something else, too, you can do with chemistry as well. And I would have done that, too.
Thank you so much, Chief Martinez, for joining us today and sharing your insights as a new chief of police for Dallas ISD. It's been an honor to have you on our show, and there's no doubt that you have important work ahead, and we eagerly anticipate the positive changes you'll implement to ensure the safety and security of our schools. We would be honored to have you join us again to provide updates on the advancements and impact of your transformative leadership. To our listeners, thank you for listening. Make sure to follow our social medias down below. Again, I'm your host, Cammy, joined by my co-hosts,
Dante,
Jelly,
Jojo.
And we'll see you in the next show. Bye.
Thank you for listening to KSBM Radio, the voice of Townview.
My radio station.
We hope you enjoyed the great content and great discussion, all from a student's perspective. Make sure to follow us on Twitter for the latest updates at KSBM_TVT or on Facebook at KSBM Radio.
Add them on Facebook.
Check them on Facebook.
Take care.